Welcome, everybody, to our show called Criminal Code. This is episode one of hopefully many. And my name is Sam, and I've served some time in the federal system. This is my host, Tony, and Hello. He served some time. And that's actually how we met. And it's kind of funny because, like, when you think about prison, you think about people being incarcerated. You don't see two Asian guys in the U.S., right? Right? And we have a show called Criminal Code talking about prison. Where
we don't fit the stereotype.
We are not the stereotype, exactly. Yeah. And the funny, fun fact of how we met, we both come from L.A., but we met in a prison in West Virginia. And out of 1,100 inmates at the time we were in prison, there was only about seven Asians.
Yeah.
And we were two out of the seven Asians out of 1,100 people.
We're a tight-knit group.
We're very tight. So we got pretty close. And long story short, we met through a program called RDAP. What does RDAP stand for?
The Residential Drug Abuse Program.
Drug Abuse Program. Okay. So what that program is if you can get into the program, you basically can serve or take away, is it 1 year?
Up to a year.
Up to a year. So you can take away up to a year of your sentencing. Mm-hmm. And the system is so whack in the U.S., instead of helping and promoting people that are doing better in life and education and whatever, they reward people who are fucked up, right?
Right.
So if you're an alcoholic or drug addict, you can basically get into RDAP. And if you get in and you pass this rigorous 9-month program, which you and I both went through, and yours was a little more than 9 months.
We'll get to that. It's brutal.
It is pretty funny. But you can get up to 12 months off your sentencing. And so it's in a way like promoting, if you're an addict, you get lesser time. If you're really good and you don't drink, you don't do drugs, then you don't have any chance of getting you stay in prison longer. So we're going to talk a little bit about RDAP. What do you think? So you tell me your experience in RDAP. I know you were in the program first. Tell me about your experiences, and let's talk about how our experiences are.
Yeah, no, I remembered. I'll start from sentencing. You know, you're standing there in front of the judge. Remember, I had a rosary in my hand, too. Not that it was going to make much of a difference at that time. And I just hear him. I'm thinking, there's the prosecutors wanted 60, which was the maximum amount you could get as a first-time nonviolent offender. But I'm sitting there just waiting. What the number is this judge going to give me? You know, and he ended up saying 24 months. You know, for first feeling was, you know, sigh of relief. Kind of over. Second was, shit, 24 months. It's a long time, you know.
I can relate to that, by the way, because you and I we both went through the same thing, right? So, like, I remember, like, my case from, like, 2013 on to 2017 when I got sentenced. So it was, like, what is that, like a 4.5-year process. Right. And, it was very, like, daunting, and you're like, is this ever going to end? And you don't know if your life is over. And at times, and I shared this with my wife, but I was suicidal at a time because I didn't know, like, how things were going to end, right?
Right.
So, like you said, like, when I got sentenced, and I was like, the judge is like, hey, you're going to be sentenced for 25 months. Man, I was like...
That's a big number.
I was relieved. At least there's a light at the end of the tunnel, right? And you're like, okay, 25 months and I'm done. But then you're like you said, whoa, 25 months is a long ass time,
you know?
Right?
I'm going to be gone for a while, mom and dad. You know,
I mean, it's less than 10 years.
Right.
But like, and just kind of like, I know you what you did and what I did was a little different. I can tell you, I didn't do anything that they said I did, but I had to plead because the system works weird where, like, If you go to trial, you have a 5% chance of winning against the federal government.
Right.
So there's no real justice. And if you lose, you get a minimum sentence of 10 years. Right. So my attorney was like, you want to go fight in a jury trial and have a 5% chance of winning, which they can make up lies and you lose and you're gone for 10 years, or you want to do a plea deal, plead guilty of something you didn't do, and then you end up serving whatever. And my sentence was 25 months. I actually served 11 months in actual prison and served the remainder 6 months in the halfway house. So I did serve. I was under the supervision of the Bureau of Prison, BOP, for about 18 months or so. But it was kind of a fucked up time in my life.
Yeah, mine was almost two years. But yeah, I won't forget the time now that you think the journey's end, but it's a new journey now. It's like, oh man, I'm going to prison. Before then, all I knew about going to prison was what I saw on TV. So I was trying to figure out, what's this place going to be like? Am I going to be in a cell? Am I going to be with Bubba? I mean, those are the thoughts that you're going to have.
Right.
And then now you start researching. What do I got to do? How do I bide my time? And that's when my defense attorney, he mentioned there's a time you get off for good time, sir. And then, there's other things you can do to lessen your time in there. And that's when he told me about the residential drug abuse, program. Fortunately, I did do drugs, I did drink. So I was able to, I didn't have to make up any stories to get into it or anything like that. But that's when I started researching. But my attorney didn't have any real experience with the residential drug abuse program. So I ended up working with one of those consulting firms to, shorten my time. So now going into prison, I'm like, well, what's it going to be like? And how do I shorten my stay?
Right.
In this place. And then you got to go through all that with the courts. And next thing I know, now it's like, well, what prison am I going to go to? And then the consulting firm handled pretty much everything.
Right, because not every prison has that program either. And that's why we were both in
Morgantown.
Morgantown, West Virginia.
Yeah, coming from Los Angeles. So I don't think they had too many in California. They have a few at the lows, but we were at the minimum, so.
Yeah, and I think the hard part was like getting into it also, because it was like the population, overpopulation, or people wanting to apply.
Right.
And so even getting into it, because the program is like 9 months long. So if you only have a sentence of 24, 25 months, if you don't get in right away, you're pretty much, doesn't really matter.
It doesn't matter at all. Right. You got to get in within your first 3 months, which I kind of ruined, but.
Right.
we'll get to that.
So. Kind of giving background of how we got to prison and like not what we did, but like getting into prison. Like, this show, I want to focus on like our time, funny shit that happened in prison. Cause it's like, when I was in there, I always wanted to figure out like, man, I wish we had like a reality TV camera following us around, because everything we do is so fucking funny, right? Like, you're like, what just happened? Like, crazy things that you would never see in real life. And you're almost like, huh, like it makes you think twice about like life of how people live, right?
Well, no, just and not even just in RDAP, but where we were at Morgantown being a minimum.
It was a low.
It was
a minimum? Okay.
It's a minimum.
Okay, yeah.
Yeah, no fences, nothing like that. But no, we had all kinds of characters in there. No one was guilty.
Yep. I wasn't guilty.
I was the only, I know I was guilty, but
there's no fence, right?
No,
like
no
when,
fence.
When you think about prison, you think there's like walls or fences or something. Like in our prison, literally you can walk out your barracks or whatever. You
could leave.
And you can walk away.
It was amazing how there was.
And Morgantown is like set into this like crazy, like wooded area.
like, looks like small a tennis town, camp.
Tennis camp. Yeah. There was like ponds with ducks, and we have a funny song called Duck Shit, like we made out of it. Yeah, so it's kind of an interesting time. And I was just thinking about like what I would envision going into prison, being like, oh my gosh, it's like fences and bars and things like that. And it was like, it wasn't like that, which is kind of nice. But at the same time, it was like, man, mentally it just drained me, because I'm like, wow, like I can literally walk away and they can't stop me. Or I guess they can stop me, but there's no one really monitoring you. But you have these, like, remember, like, you have these zombies walking around.
Those are the guys from the psych ward. They got their drugs.
Right? So, if I mean, prison, there isn't too much medical, like, attention. So, if you have any kind of issues, they just put you on drugs. And you got these people walking around like zombies. They're just like, hey.
No, it's the absolute worst. I mean, not just that, too, but, you know, the guards, I mean, these guys were pieces of work, you know, as well. But I saw a lot of those zombies the first day that I checked in.
Yeah.
I mean, I was relieved to see that the place had no fences, which was good at first. But I'll tell you what, once you get into the, you know, once you get into the check-in area and they slam that door behind you and tell you to strip and bend over, you realize, man, this shit's for real, you know. Then make me all the men that go in there. Now we're all just a bunch of boys, man. I mean, I was sitting there just waiting with other guys, and I'm just like, man, look at all these losers. And I'm like, oh shit, I'm here too.
I mean, it's funny because you got all kinds of ages, right? You have guys who are like in their 20s, all the way to like 70s, right?
Right.
And, my first like bunk mate when I first got into the prison. Actually, the first one, he was a young guy and he was leaving the next day or 2 days. So I didn't really get to know him. He wasn't really helpful either. And so I didn't know what was going on. But my literally on the third or fourth day, I met this guy. He was my bunk mate. He slept on the on the same bunk as me, and he was this white dude from West Virginia, and his, I forgot his name, but like he was like the real story of Breaking Bad, and he was like making his own cocaine out of you know, stuff. And like they, when they got him, they arrested him, he was like in this like basement of his house, of a room that didn't exist in the floor plan, and he made this crazy like room up and like was making cocaine there, and they busted him, and he said he was there for like 10 years. But he was really helpful because, you know, like we were talking about earlier, like we have 7 or 8 Asians out of 1,100 people. Right. And he was like, hey, anything you need, let me know. I'll take care of you. Just say you're with me and da 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 da. So like he kind of was one of the guys who's like, said, don't mess with him, you know? And I think you remember, but like I played basketball.
Oh, yeah. In the those league, are always fun to watch.
In we the 40 watched. Plus league.
Yeah, we always watched.
And, you know, you got these rowdy guys watching the games, and that's like our, you know, entertainment. And I was actually on a team, so I was playing, and they would call me Jalen, Jeremy Lin.
You
I don't know.
Good, though. You scored.
I was pretty good, but I didn't know if they were like complimenting me or if they were actually making fun of me. I wasn't sure what the heck was going on. And I'm like, you know, I'm like 40 something there and like making, and I mean, like there's fights going on in these games, right? Like, and the COs, they don't even do anything. They're just like sitting there, like turn a blind eye, and they're like, okay, you guys deal with this shit yourself. And I'm like literally trying to play basketball, and you know, you got arms swinging and fists flying everywhere. And I was like, oh my gosh, what am I doing here?
And you know, you can always tell the difference too. Now that I look at it in hindsight, didn't even realize it in the beginning though. You can tell who the people were that were institutionalized.
Yeah.
Coming from 10 years or 20 years. And then you could tell the difference between them and say guys like us. I was lost.
Well, you remember guys like they, like, you know, when you don't think about, like you said, institutionalized for 10 plus years. So when you think about the evolution today and you're like, ChatGPT, AI, iPhones, all this are like, it's moving so fast, right? But when we went and the guys who were like, I was in 2018. So like when we have guys who were in prison starting 10 years prior to that, they didn't even know what an iPhone was. They're like, what the heck is internet? What the heck? It's like, they don't know. They act strange.
They know one way of life.
One way of life. It's like, and it's funny because some guys are in there forever. And like, I'm like, don't you want to get out? And they're like, no, like I'm comfortable. I don't need to work. I just come and play and hang out with the boys. Right. I eat, do a little bit of work, and that's it. Like they have like a stress-free life.
They don't want to leave.
It's crazy. So let's talk about, I wanted to leave too.
I wanted to get the hell out of there. Let me tell you that one.
Yeah.
So, and that's where our dad.
Yeah. So Tony, tell us about why you served a little longer time in RDAP, and you could have been out in like 12 months, but you stayed longer, and why we call you peanut butter.
Okay. No, it's one of my, in one way I look at it as a blessing that it happened, and in other ways I look at it like, man, it sucked because I got to stay in prison longer. But no, when you first get to Morgantown, you're just in general population. You pretty much do what you want. You can behave and have fun a little bit. But then it's a matter of getting into the program itself. So then once you get there, it's a total different world. It's strict.
Super strict.
They watch. You can't do a thing. It's a snitch program. You're designed to hold each other accountable. They expect you to hold each other accountable. It was just extremely strict in terms of if you mess up, and they hold that time off, that carrot. It's always in front of you at all times. So you gotta do your best to behave. But even with me, for example, when it came to my nutrition in prison, I like peanut butter.
Can't you buy peanut butter at the commissary?
Not enough. Not enough.
There was a limit, right?
There was a limit. You can only get two jars
at a time.
Two jars at a time, and it's like, man, I only get so much of a budget that my sister would send to me every single month, and I could eat that two cans like that, So I had to think of other, other ways to get my peanut butter. Fortunately, I'd had a friend that worked in the kitchen, and the first time I would always get about 5 pounds of it at a time.
How big is 5 pounds?
It's big. It was like this.
That's a lot of peanut butter.
It cost me like 4 or 5 mackerels, which was the currency.
When he talks about mackerel, it's literally like this bag.
Your tuna fish bag. Tuna fish bag, yeah.
Yes, exactly.
But that was your George Washington's, man. that was the bills in prison. But it cost me 3 or 4 mackerels. And I got away with it, actually, the first 4 or 5 times. Then that fifth, sixth time, it's the number game. Sooner or later, you're going to get caught. And I was going to work out one day in the gym. I had the guy from the kitchen come in there with the big bag. He had a big bag on him, but inside of it was the 5 pounds of peanut butter. I gave him the mackerels. I finished my workout. I put the peanut butter in my gym bag.
Which is see-through.
Which is see-through. Yeah. But, I had the towel wrapped around it. Problem is, it's 5 pounds. So, I'm walking with it and you can see it, hanging down. And I'm thinking I'm going to get away with it because, hey, I got away with it the first 5 or 6 times. This is no problem. So I was walking out from the gym going to our dormitory. It was a good, maybe
5 minute walk.
Yeah, 5 minute walk at most. I was walking out to the gym, looking around. Coast is clear, other inmates. So, how am I going to stand out? So I was walking over to our RDAP dormitory, and halfway there, as I walked past one of the CO trucks.
It was the Ronda Rousey.
Oh, no. It was the Ronda Rousey woman and this other big dude. And at first, I thought the coast was clear, because as I walked by their truck, I was like, great. They're not going to say anything. They're not going to do anything. They kept driving. And then literally 10 seconds after that, all I hear behind me is, hey, you. And it was a woman's voice. And I'm like, oh, man.
You should have ran.
It's amazing what you think. All of a sudden, you just freeze. So I'm just standing there. And then I heard, I'm like, maybe she's talking to somebody else. And she said, hey, you. I was like, oh, yeah, now it's me. And I turn around and she was like, let me see, you know, I have to check your bag. Looks kind of heavy. You know, and, you know, we got to a point. So I walked over to the officer and, you know, I said, I don't even want to waste your time. And I opened up the bag, the peanut butter. Here it is. And the first thing I'm thinking of, oh, man, they're going to throw me in the shoe, which is the specialty housing unit. And you end up getting... You have to go on away into a special unit, and you're inside for 23 hours, and you get an hour of
sunlight.
Yeah, sunlight and free time. So then, obviously, I get caught there. So the good thing about being an RDAP, and there's a bad thing about being an RDAP, a situation like that's going to happen, is they didn't throw me in the shoe, so that was a good thing.
The bad thing is they let you deal with DTS. Is that what they're called?
I forgot. Drug treatment services. Service people.
Yeah, yeah.
Drug treatment specialists.
Yeah, specialists.
And, you know, little did I know how bad that was going to be. I'd rather have went and spent a few nights in the SHU.
Right.
Than go through the following 2 or 3 months of what I had to go through. You remember seeing during our group sessions and in front of the DTSs, I got pummeled.
Yes.
You know,
very much.
I'm thieving, you're stealing.
Oh, yes. And they try to pin you against each other. Right. And you're like, did you do this? And people are criticizing you like, Tony, I got you accountable for stealing and being super optimistic and all kinds of shit like that. And
no, and then I ended up just getting my ass kicked for a few months. So, but then the bad thing was I got held back.
Right.
You know.
And you could have went home.
I was ready to go home a couple months after that. Ended up extending it, you know, three months. So that was the, you know, the worst part, you know, about what happened there in terms of I had to spend more time. But, you know, like I said, in terms of the good parts is, well, we just started becoming friends, and
right.
At least there we were able to, I obviously after that I behaved, never got any more peanut butter again after that, and
right.
Just kind of stayed to myself, and we obviously developed our relationship as to, well, look, where I'm sitting now.
Right.
God only knows what would have happened. I tell you what, if that didn't happen, I'd probably be at, is Home Depot hire felons?
I'm not sure.
I don't know.
I mean, but, you know, it is hard, right? It's hard.
Oh, man.
No. I mean, a lot of our friends who are that we got to know in prison, they're having a hard time trying to figure out
what to do.
They're
going back.
And some of them are going back.
Yeah.
And we just had another guy that we found out is going back.
Good friend of ours. So,
yeah, it's like, it's crazy. But, like, so the thing about RDAP is, and the good thing, I guess, in our experience is that we got to meet each other. Right. We spent another extra 4 months in there. So we got to develop our friendship a little bit more. But, like, funny, let's talk about the funny stuff. Like, it's like, let's kind of talk about the characters. And, like, out of this, okay, like, we actually came up with the cartoon animation called Criminal Code. And that's why this is called Criminal Code. And how it came about is like I was saying earlier in the show, like, I wish we had cameras following us around, because every day some fucking funny shit happens to us and we can't just, you know, like, tell a story. And people are like, whatever. Like, so I was like, you know what? But to make it even more funny, we should animate it so that we can create characters and really push the envelope and be really like crass about it, because it is really crass. And but like if we showed it in real life, it's so the show is kind of about Orange is the New Black meets South Park.
Right.
And so we got these four characters, me, Tony, and then two guys, Zoe and Tay, and two black guys and two Asian guys, kind of like talking about life and their experiences. And it's literally about what we did and experienced in prison. And we wrote songs about it. We have characters about it. And like, I remember one time, there's this Pittsburgh doctor. I forgot his name. Do you remember his name?
Oh, man.
Anyways, he was like, he was a pretty tall dude and kind of big dude. And he was in the RDAP program. And he was...
Mr. Bird? Is it Bird?
Oh, man, I don't remember his name. But
the
like,
guy that washed his nuts in the sink.
Yes. The guy who washed his nuts in the sink.
Okay, that's got to be the best
That one. Is the funniest thing. And you're like... So in prison, we have bathrooms that you share with everyone. And so it's like, we keep it clean. There's people who clean it every day. It's one of the inmates. I was actually one of the guys who cleaned the bathroom. But like, you go into the bathroom and this dude was literally... butt naked in the compound of 100 guys, and he pulls out his balls and he starts washing his balls.
He's too lazy to take a shower. He had to go and wash his nuts.
In the sink where people are brushing their teeth and like washing their face. And you're like, oh my God, you got like pubes everywhere. Can you clean up after?
That was the best part too, because then you know we're in the RDAP program, so you got to hold people accountable, you know, for it. So it's like, oh man, it was funny when they were like, oh man, this dude's washing his nuts in the sink. But then we're like, oh shit, we can't wait till tomorrow during group.
Who's gonna hold him accountable? So, I think it was one of my bunkies who held him accountable. Right.
The Oh,
Jordan or
yes,
right?
The black guy.
Younger. Yeah. So,
oh man,
next morning we go and like, hey, I forgot his name.
We'll call him Dr. Bird.
Can you stand up? I want to hold you accountable, and we have a structure.
Explain why.
And so, in front of the like 90 to 100 guys, all lined up in chairs, you stand up. You literally stand up like this in front of people. And you say, hi, my name is so and so, and I have you, or I'm holding you accountable for washing your balls in the sink.
And trying to hear everyone contain their laughter in that building. Oh, I didn't want to get in trouble. I wanted to die, man.
And the worst part is he has to not go in front of 100 people and 4 DTSs.
With his little bird nest haircut. the bird nest. He was shading.
He has to go in front of everyone and say, yes, I'm in the sink. And then you have the inmates, like, we have to ask questions. Like, why did you wash your nuts in the sink?
What was your thought process?
Because it's a whole psychological drug program. Yeah. So it wants to teach us how we're thinking. And so during the process of being in prison in this program, like everyone has to learn what you're thinking, your thought process, your actions. And it's like when you do stupid shit like that, now you're standing in front of everyone and people are asking you questions and you got to answer these questions. He's like, do you remember what he said when he's like, why were you washing your balls? He said, I was tired. I was taking a shower. And the sink was right there, and I just wanted to pull on my nuts and wash my balls.
Like you can't script,
what the heck?
You can't script this at all. Like, that stuff really happens.
It's crazy. Oh, man.
You know, and those were that's the thing, too. It's like, with my situation, the RDAP program, they train you to hold people accountable. We call that more snitching. On each other, you know. So for me, when I got caught with the peanut butter, I was, you know, what they really wanted was who I got the stuff from.
Right. They want to see the source.
Yes.
It's like drug dealing.
Yeah.
They want to know the source. Or are you going to snitch?
Yeah.
Because what happens in prison?
Yeah, that's
if you snitch.
Oh man.
It's the worst thing.
It doesn't matter if you're in the maximum securities or the minimums where we're at. If you're labeled as a snitch, you're on your own. You know, so fortunately, I kept my mouth shut. But then in situations like with an RDAP, every day we're holding each other accountable. Like normally you see some dude washing his nuts in the sink. You just kind of let him do his thing. Just never use the sink again.
No.
But I know that was definitely one of the funnier times in terms of going through RDAP. Like I said, a lot of the stuff in there you can't script out. But then a lot of things, too, a program like RDAP, we end up meeting people and becoming friends with people we probably wouldn't have.
Yeah, and I think...
There. Like, look at Bling and Zoe.
Yeah, and then I think one of the things that I realized when I went, even though I felt like I didn't deserve to go to prison, one of the things that I feel like I was there for was to kind of understand, because prior to prison... I had this stereotype of people into prison and who went, I was like, oh my God, those guys are like the scums of the earth and this and that. And once I got in there, I learned, and I learned to meet people individually, one-on-one versus as a group. Like you can say, oh, drug dealers are this, so they deserve to be in prison. But then as I got to know people, even a drug dealer, I was like, so why did you sell drugs? And they're like, well, I have three kids and my youngest, who was a newborn, was going through medical issues. We didn't have health insurance, so we needed $10,000 or $15,000 to do surgery, and he didn't have any source. Prior to that, he was like doing a regular job making $30,000, $40,000 a year, but with that, how do you pay for a $15,000 surgery? You can't. And so he's like, when I went to sell drugs and try to do some deals to raise money for my kid's surgery, he got caught. So now he's in prison. So as you get to learn and to meet individually people, then you learn their story of how they got there. And not because they were just like, oh, I want to be the kingpin drug dealer or like whatever, because most of them are not like that. They're just got like, they got pay families to pay the bills. And they're like, I got to do that because, you know, it's the process of the system, right? It's like you come from the ghetto. You don't know. You go to school. They don't teach you anything. You don't get good jobs. So like, the only way to get out is like doing things that are illegal sometimes to like get you ahead of life a little bit, or to help with family bills, or to get the health stuff. So I was like, I got to know a lot of people. I learned who they are. I'm a business guy, right? So I'm an entrepreneur. I've been an entrepreneur for like 25 years. And so I have a certain level of like empathy and sympathy. And I wanted to teach people. So when I got there, I was like talking to people and showing them like, hey, let's do a business plan. And you see, like I was doing spreadsheets with people. Like, what are you good at? Like, instead of selling drugs, because your drug dealers are like good salespeople.
Right.
They're good business people. Let's have a different product.
Buy low, sell high.
Right. So we're like, I was helping people like, hey, you like to cook. You learn how to cook in prison. You like to cook. So let's figure out like, hey, let's do a food truck. And like, let's work out the spreadsheet of how the budget, everything works. And I don't know what happened to the guy that helped with that, but hopefully he did get out and stop selling drugs and went to go start a food truck. But like other guys, like our friends like Zoe and Tay, like, yeah, they're struggling, but I'm like, hey, bro, like, let's not get back into drugs, because, man, being in prison for 1 year, 6 months, or 10 years, it's like you don't want to be in there. It's just like you have kids especially and families, and you just want to stay out. You know, even if you're not making money, right? And so, like, I feel like I made an impact on a number of people. I can't make impact on everyone, but I've made an impact on a certain group of people that I got to know well, right? And so now with this animation, hopefully that's going to get picked up in streaming or somewhere. It's another level or another, like, platform to help people and families kind of, like, understand, be political, to learn, to understand, like, how the system works, and like maybe laugh and let the country be aware of what's going on. You know, like it's prison is big business, you know, and US has the highest rate of incarceration of any country since 2002. So, you know, it's big business. And when there's big business and judges own prisons, or they own a lot of stocks in prisons and private prisons, it's like, instead of trying to help families and say like, hey, get a house arrest, be in your house and learn and get rehab. It's like, no, I'll just go to prison. I mean, like, what do we learn in prison? Nothing. We literally sit there and if you can either like be in front of 1,000 inmates and learn how to be a better criminal when you get out, mm-hmm. or which a lot of people did, or you can be productive and learn.
Yeah, no, things, the only thing I learned in prison was I never want to go back.
Exactly.
So, I'll never, my worst day since I got out of prison, my worst day that I say that I would have in the free world is always better
yeah,
than any day in prison. They take that freedom from you. Fortunately, 19 out of 20 people don't experience that, but it's when they take your freedom from you, it's a whole different,
right?
Whole different ball game.
Yeah, they said right now it's somewhere around 5% of any American, like 1 out of 20 people, will be going to prison. That's pretty high. So,
but the good thing was, it was funny, and hence the criminal code cartoon and stuff. The situations like with the guy washing his nuts, the episodes right. like that. But it's definitely, you always wanted me to go back and look at the positives of some things. And it was funny. A lot of things you can't script.
But. Yeah. And I think, our time's coming up for this episode, but in future episodes, we'd love to talk more about, getting out this background and how we got here. But like in future episodes, want to talk about more funny shit. Mm-hmm. More experiences. If we can help like get a guest and like get people to help and kind of spread the word about what goes on in prison right. and things like that, that's what this show is about. And
or even those that are going in.
Oh yeah.
Even the questions that I wish that I would have known or asked before I went in, because I was on my own. So this would be a good time for people wanting to get in those questions like, what do I expect? What do I do?
For sure.
Definitely, at least between the two of us. We got the
answers. We have a lot of knowledge.
If not, we got the federal prison guidebook over in my office in case we ever need it. But no, we definitely would know. But there are good things. Remember, there are good things that can come out of a bad situation because I'm sitting here,
And there is life after prison.
There
is life after prison. You just got to make smart choices.
Right.
Meet the right people. Do the right things. And keep your head up. Right?
100%.
All right. Well, thank you for listening to our podcast. And
thank you.
For future podcasts, please look out. And today's was a little bit more serious and a little bit depressing, I guess, because we talked about how we got there. But I think in future episodes, we'll be more lively. There'll be more laughter. There'll be more stories. And we're going to make it entertaining, but also like educational.
Yes.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Peace.